one of the greatest mysteries of the Torah is to identify precisely which sin was committed by Nadav and Avihu that earned them their untimely death. And it's an oddity that there's so much in Rishonim, there's so much in Achronim, you can find literally dozens of potential Averos that are the culprit or the supposed culprit for the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. The reason that that's an oddity is because the Torah says exactly what it was. The Torah says that they brought an Esh Zara that Hashem had not commanded. So because they brought this Esh Zara that Hashem had not commanded, therefore they died. But of the many potential Averos that the Shnei Bnei Aaron may have violated, according to Chazal, it's not just Rishonim and Achronim, the Gemara itself offers a number of possibilities. Of the many potential Averos, one of them was that they never got married. And as a result of never having gotten married, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished them. But the Medrash specifically highlights that you might think, oh, they never got married. It means that they did something that wasn't right. They were really punishing themselves by not getting married. And they should have lived a more fulfilled life. They should have tried to find a proper shidduch and made sure that they were able to have children, they were able to have a family. The Medrash highlights that by not getting married, it wasn't that they were punishing themselves, it's that they were punishing lots and lots of women. The Medrash tells us, Harbe Nashim, Ho Yoshvos Agunos Mamtinos Lahem. There were many women that stayed unmarried, wouldn't marry anybody else, because they were waiting for Nadav and Avihu. Mahoy Omrim, what would they say? What would Nadav and Avihu say? Achi Avinu Melech, our father's brother is the king. Moshe Rabbeinu had a din Melech. Achi Imenu Nasi, our mother's brother is a Nasi. Avinu Kohen Gadol, our own father is a Kohen Gadol. V'anu Shnei Sagani Kohuna, and we're the two assistant Kohanim Gedolim. So Ezo Isha Hogenes Lanu, what woman would be appropriate for us? What woman would have the Yichus to match our Yichus? To borrow the old expression, the girl hadn't been born yet that would be deserving of marrying such miyuchasim, such exceptional people. There are lots of eligible young women who convince themselves that they would be the fortunate ones to marry Nadav and Avihu, and they therefore wouldn't go out with any other guys, right? They'd get the shidduch resume, and their mom would say, oh, we got a shidduch resume for this guy, and they would say, well, is his name Nadav or Avihu? And the mom would say, no, but he seems like a very nice boy, and he's going to be an accountant or a doctor, and they would say, no, I'm sorry, if his name is not Nadav and Avihu, then I'm simply not interested. So after a while, these young women became older singles, and ultimately never got married, all because the Shnei Bnei Aaron didn't get married. And that, says the Medrash, was the Avera. It's what they did to these young women. So, a simple question. They never told these girls to wait around for them. They never gave these young women any false hope. They didn't tell them, you should wait for us because maybe we'll change our mind. It's not like they were one of these serial daters who was, just stringing a girl along all this time, never with any intention to get married. These young women did it to themselves. If you want to say that Nadav and Avihu should be punished for thinking that they're too great to marry regular people, I understand that. That's a gaiva problem, right? That they think that they're so great that nobody can marry them, that nobody's going to be good enough for them. It's not what the Medrash says. The Medrash says that they're faulted for making these women into agunos. But they didn't make these women into agunos. These women made themselves into agunos. So that is question number one. Question number two. Pasuk tells us Ve'avam Moshe Aaron el Ol Moed, and Rashi writes Kivan Shara Aaron Shekarvu Kol Hakarbanos V'Nasu Kol Hamaisim. Aaron Hakohen saw that they brought all the karbanos they were supposed to bring. They did everything they were supposed to do. V'Lo Yarda Shechina LiYisrael, and still the Shechina had not descended to Klal Yisrael. Right, there is the expression from an old movie from my youth: if you build it, they will come. So they were told, you build the Mishkan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to rest his Shechina, and they built it, and he didn't come. There was no Shechina. So Himitzar V'Amar, Aaron HaKohen was very broken by this, and he said, Yodea ani shakas HaKadosh Baruch Hu alai. I know that Hashem's angry at me. Ubishvili lo yarda Shechina liYisrael, and it's my fault that the Shechina is not coming to Klal Yisrael. Amalo le Moshe, he said to Moshe, Moshe achi, kacha sisali shenichnasti v'nispayashti. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, how could you do this to me? That you brought me in and you had me do all this stuff, and now I'm embarrassed. Nothing, because it's obvious that Hashem doesn't want to be with me. Hashem doesn't want to shechin anywhere near me. So now you've caused me all this embarrassment. So Moshe Rabbeinu, realizing that Aaron HaKohen was embarrassed, miyad nichnas Moshe imo ubikshu rachamim v'yarda shechina l'Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu brought Aaron HaKohen in with him and he davened for him, and the shechina came down to Klal Yisrael. When all the korbanos had been brought and the shechina was supposed to come down and reside in the Mishkan, it simply didn't work and Aaron was humiliated. So he turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and shockingly, he blamed Moshe. How could you set me up for such a colossal failure? Moshe immediately responded by taking responsibility and walking into the Ohel Moed with him and davening until the Shechina showed up. And there are two points that are troubling about this Rashi. First of all, how could Aaron blame Moshe? It was only by Hashem's command that Aaron had approached the Mizbeach in the first place. Did Aaron really have a havamina that Moshe Rabbeinu was making this up? Moshe Rabbeinu obviously was working only with the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It wasn't Moshe who set up Aaron for failure, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who set up Aaron for failure. Second of all, if we're going to assume that it was somehow Moshe's fault, why didn't he offer to help immediately? Why did he need to wait for Aaron to tell him to take Achrayus? Shouldn't Moshe have taken Achrayus on his own without Aaron telling him, I'm embarrassed? Shouldn't Moshe realize that, look, there's a problem over here? So again, the three questions are as follows. Number one, why is it that the Medrash blames the Bnei Aaron for the women who were agunos waiting for these eligible young men? That's not the Bnei Aaron's fault. That's these young women's fault. Second question, why is it that Aaron blamed Moshe? Did Aaron not realize that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command that Moshe was following? And finally, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu had to wait for Aaron to tell him, you know, I feel embarrassed, and only then take Achrayus for it? Shouldn't have Moshe Rabbeinu have done something on his own? So there is a yesod that is as true as it is obvious, really. And it is pointed out, it's a yesod in Musar, it's a yesod in Ben Adam L'Chaveru, it's a yesod in Midos, that's offered by Rav Henoch Leibowitz, the Zatzal, the Rosh Shiva of Yeshiva Chavetz Chaim. It develops a basic idea in Midos Tovos, as he does throughout many of his Divrei Torah, many of his Musar Shmuzin, were just fundamentals of Midos Tovos. And he points out in his Sefer, Chidushe Halev, he points out that many times when somebody tells us that we've caused them pain, when someone tells us, you know, you really hurt me, our immediate reaction is to explain our behavior. We behaved appropriately. We had to do what we did. It was really the right thing. And part of that is that we justify to ourselves that if I behaved in the right way, if I behaved in the proper manner, then the pain of the other person is not my concern, because I had to do what I had to do. So if they're in pain, they're in pain. It's not really my problem. There are two problems with that thought process. First of all, sometimes our assessment is incorrect, and we actually didn't behave properly, and that's normally what the Musar Shmuz is about, right? Normally people would focus on that we're not the best judges of ourselves. We often give ourselves the benefit of the doubt without giving others the benefit of the doubt. But second, and I think this is the point that Rav Henoch really wants to make, and that I would like to share with you, is that even in those cases where we did the right thing, and there was no better way to handle the situation, we literally had to do what we did, we still have to take achrayus for the pain that our actions might cause to other people. Just because we were correct, it doesn't mean that we don't have to deal with the consequences of our correctness. So yes, the world is not black and white. You know, sometimes we think, oh, well, as long as I'm right, then it's okay. Then everything that happens afterwards is not a concern of mine at all. That's not true. Even if I'm right, even if I'm correct, even if there was no other way for me to behave, even if it's what I had to do, what I was obligated to do, if I would have asked 10 poskim, 10 out of 10 would have answered the shaila, this is what I need to do, but it hurt my fellow Jew, it hurt somebody else, I still have to be worried about that part also. Rav Henoch gives an example from the story with Yosef HaTzadik and Eshes Potiphar. The Medrash in Bereishis Rabba says that at a certain point Yosef thought to himself that when he was in his parents' home, if a delicious portion of food became available and he was given that portion, his brothers would look at him jealously. And now that he's in Mitzrayim and he's all alone, nobody's there to be jealous of him. So consequently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're sitting here with no worries on your mind? I'm going to give you something to worry about. And he sends Eshes Potiphar to go after him. And the Eitz Yosef explains that the criticism of Yosef was, and here's the lashon of the Eitz Yosef, Hare ata adam yechidi, panoi uvatel bli daga. Here you are, a lone individual, free of any worries. Veincha mashkiach b'tzar v'daga savicha, and you're not consumed by the tsar, by the pain, by the suffering, by the worry, by the concern that your father has every day of his life. And Rav Henoch points out that criticism of Yosef for enjoying life seems a little bit misplaced, because even Yitzchak only mourned and cried while he was in Yaakov's presence in order to commiserate with Yaakov. But as soon as Yitzchak left Yaakov's presence, he would live life normally. He would eat and drink and laugh and smile and behave like a regular person. And that's what the pasuk means when it says, Vayevk oso aviv, specifically, ze Yitzchak. Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Simon Amru etzlo hayaboche. Yitzchak would cry when he was with Yaakov. V'kimin she'atam etzlo. But as soon as he left Yaakov, hayaholech v'rocheitz v'sach v'yochel v'shoseh, he'd go and he'd take a nice bath and he would anoint himself with very luxurious oils, and he would eat and he would drink. So why couldn't Yosef, who was nowhere near his father, also take it easy? Yitzchak was allowed to. So says Rav Henoch the same Yisod. Since Yosef was the cause of his father's pain, no fault of his own. No one's going to blame Yosef for being sold down to Mitzrayim, for having everything that was done to him. He was a victim over here. But he was the cause of his father's pain, and therefore he has to take responsibility for it, and he has to share in that pain. It's not about whether a person behaved properly or improperly. If I am the vehicle through which somebody else feels pain, then that has to bother me. And when it comes to interpersonal relationships, and particularly in family life, we're very prone to fall into this trap. If we were correct in punishing a child or in choosing to do something else other than what our spouse or parent was asking of us, and our correct decision caused pain to other people, then we have to feel responsibility for that pain. It's a complicated emotion, because we have to feel right when we did right, and at the same time feel terrible about how right we did. Feel terrible about the damage that it may have caused other people. In the Rav Chaim Kanievsky biography, when it first came out, I was just thinking, no one should read this biography, because he just lived in such a different world that it's not going to be meaningful or impactful to anybody. It's just going to make us feel, millions and millions of miles apart from him. But then I read it and I changed my mind. I think it's a biography that should be read, and it's important to know that we shared this earth with a person like this. Anyway, the story is told in that biography of the time that Rav Yitzchak Sharfaz, who came to Rav Chaim on the night of Bedikas Chametz in great anguish, because there was apparently a medical test that one of his children needed, this Rav Yitzchak Sharfaz's children needed, and it was a very scary time in his family. And he came into Reb Chaim's house, needing a bracha, looking for a bracha, but Reb Chaim was right in the middle of Bedikas Chametz. So Reb Chaim would spend, you have to understand Reb Chaim and his attitude toward Bedikas Chametz, he would spend 5 hours doing Bedikas Chametz on his mansion in Bnei Brak. I'm just joking, he didn't have a mansion, on his two-room apartment in Bnei Brak. 5 hours. He took Bedikas Chametz very seriously. Once a grandchild with a growing family was deciding whether to buy a smaller apartment or a larger apartment, and Reb Chaim said, you got to buy the smaller apartment, because how are you going to manage Bedikas Chametz in the larger apartment? That's how seriously Reb Chaim took Bedikas Chametz. When people whose homes were ruined in Hurricane Sandy came for brachos and they showed pictures of the damage to Reb Chaim, he couldn't believe the size of the homes in America. What couldn't he believe? The gashmius? He couldn't believe. No, he said, how could these people ever do Bedikas Chametz? That's what Reb Chaim looked at, and he couldn't imagine. How are you going to do Bedikas Chametz in a house like that? 7 bedrooms? Where? How do you do Bedikas Chametz? And he gave the person, anyway, this person came right in the middle of Bedikas Chametz, gave him a quick bracha of a Refuah Shleima, but he had to continue the Bedika, which was clearly the halachically correct move at the time. And at midnight, when Rav Chaim finally finished the bedika, he asked a family member if they knew where this Sharfaz family lived. And the family member said, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in Rehov Chidushe Harim in Bnei Brak. So Rav Chaim went to each building on the street, and he read the names by the door, you know, where you can ring the door, by the mailboxes, until he found the door that said Sharfaz. And he found Rav Sharfaz crying over a Tehillim, and he apologized for not spending more time with him earlier. They said Tehillim together for a half hour. You have to understand what that means to Reb Chaim, what a half hour of his time was, before Reb Chaim left so that he could finish his chovos, because this was the night of Bedikas Chametz. Reb Chaim's annual siyum was on Erev Pesach. His siyum on everything, on Kol HaTorah Kulo, was on Erev Pesach. So Reb Chaim had to finish his chovos that night, had to finish his learning that night. So did he do the right thing? He did the right thing when the fellow came. He was in the middle of Bedikas Chametz. What's he supposed to do? He can't help the child anyway. But if there was somebody that was in pain as a result of his actions, then that's not a tolerable situation. He has to do something to rectify that. My father-in-law told me that there was an expression that he used to use a lot in business. The expression was, it's not about what you told them, it's about what they heard. And that's precisely the point. You may have said the perfect thing, but if it wasn't heard in the way that it was meant, then there's a problem that needs to be addressed. We may have done the right thing and said the right thing and been in the right place, but if someone else was hurt by it and didn't receive it in the way that we meant it, then that needs to be addressed. And based on this idea, Rav Henoch uses this idea to answer the questions that we began with. When Aaron went into the Ol Moed and he didn't meet with success, he was hurt. It wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu's fault. Moshe had done exactly what he was supposed to do, and Aaron knew that Moshe did exactly what he was supposed to do. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't run to offer help because he was busy with other things and he had done nothing at all wrong. It's only when Aaron expressed to Moshe Rabbeinu, I am hurt, I am humiliated, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to do something about it. It didn't matter that he was right, that Moshe Rabbeinu had done nothing wrong. What mattered was that Aaron was hurt and Moshe played a role in it. And because Moshe Rabbeinu had played a role in it, he had to try to fix it. Nadav and Avihu may have suffered from gaiva, that there's no woman worthy of marrying them, and they may have failed to do the mitzvah of Pur Ravu, mitzvah rabba, Chazal call it. But worse than all of that was that they caused pain to Benos Yisrael, to holy Benos Yisrael, who only wanted to get married and were waiting for them. Was it Nadav and Avihu's fault? No, not their fault, but if you cause pain to another person, then ultimately you bear responsibility for that. You know, sometimes an old Musar idea, when formulated in a slightly different way, hits home. It just hits a little different. Now, of course, we all know that we're supposed to be sensitive to other people's feelings. And of course, we should never want to be the cause of another person's pain. But we often think of it as like a choice between right and wrong. You know, as long as I do the right thing, I don't have to worry about the pain that it causes. Rav Henoch is reminding us that there are times when we did what needed to be done, or said what needed to be said, and if our correct behavior hurts someone else, we still need to feel that pain and do whatever is in our power to mitigate it. You know, I'm very bothered by a lot of the discussion that people have sometimes around the Nebuchadnezzar hostages that are being held in Gaza. You hear people say, but the IDF has to do what it has to do. So we can't. We can, you know, what do these families want? What do we, you know, we have to wipe out our enemy. We can't feed the enemy, back all of their terrorists so that they can harm more people in an effort to get our people back, in an effort to get our hostages back. And you know what? That might be right. It might be right. It might be correct. It might be 100% correct. But sometimes there's a certain callousness in the way that these things are said. We have to realize that even when we're making the right decisions, not that these are our decisions to make, but even when we're making the right decisions, if people are hurt, then we have to be sensitive to the pain of other people. We have to be sensitive to the pain that people are going through. It should keep us awake at night, the horrors that people are living through, 180 days, in Hamas tunnels. It's something that's unthinkable, it's unimaginable, and you know, it would stifle us from being able to move on with our day if we think about it too much. but at least to express a certain amount of sensitivity. And of course, on a more, direct personal level with our own families, we're coming closer to the Yom Tov of Pesach. We're going to spend a lot of time with families, and there are all these issues that come up. Someone gets married, and they have a minhag this way, and they have a minhag that way, and it causes us a fight. There's a, but I asked my rabbi, and he told me this hashgacha is not reliable, and shita, whatever the issues are. And you may be right, and we often are. We're 100% right. But we have to be so careful that even when we're right, and even when we're doing the right thing, to be sensitive to the idea that right and wrong is not always black and white. That even when we're right and we have to do the right thing, we still have to be hurt by the hurt of other people, by the pain that we might cause to other people. And God willing, when we understand, when we really, really internalize other people's feelings properly, we'll be able to have a greater sense of togetherness, a greater sense of love one for the other, for other members of Klal Yisrael. And that's what we need right now. In the first few months after October 7th, we were seeing a lot of achdus, and now we're seeing the fissures, we're seeing the breaking of a lot of that achdus, and we can't afford it. Someone once, one of the Israeli spokespeople, who was a very, very powerful spokesperson for the prime minister and then was fired and now was back, or something, whatever. One of the things he said was that we never want to go back to October 7th, but we really, really can't afford to ever go back to October 6th. And, unfortunately, we see that seems to be the direction we're heading in, and just needs a little more from each of us, a little more sensitivity, a little more love. And Be'ezus Hashem, we should be zocha to feel that pain of others and to express that love to one another. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.